Hey, it's Chuck Armstrong with Loudwire Nights, and this is Loudwire Nights On Demand. We had the privilege of hanging with Henry Rollins talking about the cramps. You are going to love this conversation. This aired on Thursday, June 4th. Here we go.
Well, some big news came out recently about a new company that launched to restart the record label of the legendary Cramps, Vengeance Records. And we reported on it at loudwire.com, and I am beyond excited to say that tonight we've got one of the people involved in this this new milestone in the story of the Cramps, Henry Rollins. Henry, man, it's always good to have you on the show. Thank you so much for hanging.
Good to see you.
So before we get into this, because I am really curious as to how all of this came to be, we've got to go to the beginning for you and the Cramps, how they first came into your life, all of that. And you've talked about this, you know, in various places, and it was a bit of part of the announcement, but you saw them in 79 in DC and it changed you. I mean, can you take us, take us back to that, man?
Yeah. The first time I heard the band, you know, my best friend, Ian Mackay, he went to the cool school. He went to Wilson. I think it's a different name now. That's how old we are. But all of his friends were people who ended up in early Discord Records bands. So there's a playlist. And he heard cool music way before I did. And thanks to Ian, I heard this cool music that his cool friends were turning him on to. So we're driving in his car one day. He's got the mixtape going. And what's this band doing the song Human Fly? I was like, whoa, like, what's that? It blew my mind. And he goes, oh, that's the Cramps. You never heard of them? I'm like, no. We see each other every day. Like, I'm not going to hear something if he doesn't know about it. So I said, no, I haven't. And so, of course, he had. And he told me about them. And so he saw them in February of 79 by crawling in through a window at the Hall of Nations on the campus of Georgetown University. He recorded the show with his mom's tape recorder. It's the first copy of a tape I ever made. I figured out two tape decks, RCA out, RCA in. Yeah. Like, it works. And so I actually showed that cassette to Ivy one day. I said, this is the star. And she's like, whatever. I thought she'd be fucked up. Anyway, I turned 18 in February of 79 so I can go to clubs. In April of 79, the Cramps played a small bar called LBJ. And it's, I don't remember it being sold out, but it's a bar that services as a venue. And you've probably been to about at least 1,000 of those, where the stage is kind of tucked away and the Christmas lights go around the banister and the parquet floor. And the PA is kind of just screwed into the wall next to the TV or something. It was a very low-tech scene. And I paid my $3 or whatever, and there's the Cramps. So I stood next to Ian, and the stage is about a foot high. And you can, you know, you can smell them. You can walk right up there. And I stood in front of the Cramps, which is Brian Gregory to my left, and then Lux in the middle, Nick Knox at the back, and Ivy on my right. And they started playing. And luckily, that show, a CDR of it, was on eBay a few years ago, and I bought it. And it is as cool as I remember the show. And they play this amazing music. And to see these four very interesting looking people. I mean, they're all kind of rugged and beautiful and charismatic in their own way, but it's like a live monster movie, crazy sitcom playing out in front of you. And they're literally right in front of you. And so I remember during the song Rockin' Bones, when Brian Gregory screams, raw bones, raw bones, his acne scars turned red. And I'm like, oh, okay, like, this is real. And I kind of staggered out of that show, and I don't think I've ever recovered.
Man.
And I say that about that band and that show. I said, I never got better. And it was the first show, I believe, it's the first show I ever saw in a club. Because I was raised on arena rock. You know, I'm underage. I would go see Led Zeppelin and Ted Nugent, and all of it was great. And then I saw The Clash in a theater, the Ontario. But that's like 800, 1,000 people. So it's smaller than 25,000. But a club, I mean, you can walk up and talk to anybody. By the end of the show, Lux is on the bar dancing. I forget if he was dressed or not. And punching the ceiling tiles out of the ceiling of the club. You can put them back. And the owner of the club is behind the bar just laughing. Like, what else are you going to do? And that was my introduction to the live version of the Cramps. And I was immediately addicted. And that was, you know, the year of seeing the Cramps and the Bad Brains live.
Man.
And, you know, Bad Brains were local. So we had a local band that was amazing. And then and the Cramps were New Yorkers at that time. And they understood that DC was Cramps territory. I mean, we loved that band. And whenever they would play, we would all go, of course. And they would come down pretty often because we were always, we'd always pack whatever place it was. And then the Cramps started playing the Ontario. And so we packed that place out because they just got more and more popular. And it was never a bad show. I mean, they always were just, you know, larger than life. And so that's how I got into the Cramps. And to this day, I'm still kind of, you know, in the thrall of all of that.
Yeah, I love that, man. Well, when you first heard Human Fly, I mean, there were only a few songs out, right? Four songs at that time.
Yeah, two 7-inches.
Yeah.
And I believe I bought, I think, I forget which single it was. I believe I bought one of those early Cramps records, the first two 7-inches. I think I might have bought one from a Cramps roadie at LBJ. I'm really thinking it's either that or I bought it at Yesterday and Today Records run by Skip Groff out in Rockville, Maryland, where we bought a lot of our first punk rock records. I think Ian might have already had the 7-inch. Yeah, because he made the mixtape. So I caught up with him. And then summer 79, summer 80, somewhere in there, in the UK, a 12-inch came out called Greatest Hits. And that was the first two singles, plus the Cramps channeling the great Ricky Nelson doing their version of Lonesome Town. And I bought it, A, because there's an unreleased song on it. B, there's that great Stephanie Chernikowski photo on the cover, that great portrait shot. And so I had that. And Lonesome Town, I just put it on all my mixtapes because it's rare. And I didn't understand the context. You know, I was to learn quite a bit more about those five songs decades later, which kind of is into our story today.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that's the foundation, man. You know, you hear Human Fly, you buy the 7-inches, you see the live show, and like you said, you've never recovered since. And then we get to 2026 or, you know, 2025 or whenever this started. And I guess that's the question, man. So this new company, the Cramps Inc., you know, officially announced launching Vengeance Records, a whole lot of plans, and we'll get into that. But you had mentioned you were working on this sort of, you know, in confidence, in private for several months. How did this all come to be? Like, when did this start for you? And when did it feel like, oh, this is actually like, we're going to do this. We're going to relaunch Vengeance. We're going to be part of this.
Well, I'm sure you know of In the Red Records, owned and operated by Larry Hardy, who's just an excellent human being. And he does, he and I do a lot of projects together. We just released the UK Subs 12-inch, which the last time you came over to the house, I played that for you. Came out. We've got other things in the works, as usual. And so Larry and I are, as I like to say, we're in cahoots. We're always up to something. And we're both, you know, vinyl nerds, and we love the rare stuff. And there's all these bands that we like. Anyway, he and I are in touch all the time, working on projects and whatever else. And so years ago, I said to Larry, who is, you know, it's, I'm not going to talk out of class, but I think it's fair to say that Lux and Ivy, and we lost Lux in 2009, Lux and Ivy are not the easiest people to get to know. You know, they were kind of unto themselves. And Larry and his wife, Robin, were friends with Lux and Ivy. And Larry has done a lot of work with them over the years. Like, they have Vengeance Records. And so when a foreign licensing deal is over, Larry would help them with the paperwork to redo the licensing, because that's his milieu, if you like. And so he's been over to the house a million times. And when he calls Ivy, she'll call back. When I call, I get crickets. And so Lux passes away. And over the years, Larry is kind of keeping his eye on Ivy. And at one point years ago, I said to Larry, I would really like to help Ivy archive you know, the things at her house, because we're all kind of getting to a point in our lives where this stuff is piling up and you might have moved on to other things in your life. I get it. So I would like to talk to her about maybe getting the tapes out of the garage, because no recording tape should be in a garage. It should be in an HVAC climate controlled environment, which I have. And I'd love to be, you know, I'd like to work on those archives, you know, at no cost. I just want to do the right thing. That's what it's all about. And so he brought her over to my place, and my manager Heidi was there, and we just spent the afternoon talking about all of this. And Heidi, my manager, and I helped her get a merch deal because there's so many Cramps bootlegs out. So we worked that out with her and Warner Brothers, and that ended up doing really well. And so over the years, Larry and I are always talking about Ivy, how's she doing, what's going on. And we start to see all these bootlegs. There's always been Cramps bootlegs because the band is in demand. But you start to see the studio albums being bootlegged, which means the catalog is out of print. Every T-shirt you see online pretty much is a bootleg. So that's not right. That's really not right. And so as the years go on, we're thinking more and more, we have to right this wrong. And so Larry and I, we talk all the time, and one of our main topics is the Cramps and Ivy. And so we get it in our minds, and it's probably Larry's idea, but I did say it to him at one point. Vengeance Records has to come back. 2026 is going to be the year of vengeance. Like, you know, we're going to get vengeance back on the road. And so he got going, and at one point, Ivy was okay with the tapes, you know, getting out of the garage. So when Larry was going through the inventory of the tapes, he comes across this pack of quarter-inch tapes. And he goes, hey, what's this? She goes, oh, it's this thing that it was an idea, but we shelved it. It was called Gravest Gravy. What's that? Well, you find out that in October 1977, when the Cramps go into the studio, Nick Knox is newly in the band. They go in to Memphis, Tennessee, Arden Studios with the great visionary maniac, Alex Chilton. And their idea is they're going to record their first A-side, which is going to be TV Set, a great song of theirs. And then they're going to record more whatever else. Alex Chilton says, how about this? Let's just record every song you've got. And we'll just pick out, you know, the best of the litter. And so luckily, the Cramps did just that. And they ended up with a ton of music. And from that comes the first two singles, Human Fly Domino, The Way I Walk, and Surfing Bird. Surfing Bird's their first A-side. This is the craziest idea. And that's also where Lonesome Town comes from. And that's what informs Gravest Hits. And so you find out a ton of other music happened. So in 89, Lux and Ivy go into a studio in North Hollywood, and they mix a bunch of songs. Alex Chilton over in Memphis, he mixes some songs and sends that quarter-inch tape over. And that's what was going to comprise Gravest Gravy. So they had the name, they had the tracks, and they had the cover photo taken by the great and sadly recently passed away Stephanie Chernikowski, who also did Gravest Hits, that great portrait shot. Gravest Gravy, the idea is, well, here's more gravy. Like, you know, here's more of those October 77 sessions. So basically the record was going to be a love letter to the fans, bringing everyone back around to the beginning, October 77 in Memphis, and here's more of it. And reasons lost to time, the project got shelved. Larry decided, well, let's take the tapes to the great Brian Kehew, guy extraordinaire over at Warner Brothers, and let's bake and transfer and see what's what. And so he did that, and he sent the digital to me, and took me a while to get my jaw off the floor. And so he said, what? I said, well, how about since I'm like your audio guy, I work for Larry. Larry's the boss of Cramps Inc. I am his audio wingman. I serve at the pleasure of Ivy and Larry Hardy and Jimmy Maslin, who's also helping Larry run Cramps Inc. Good man. Anyway, each quarter-inch tape has multiple mixes. It's up to me to figure out how the mixes are changing take to take and what's moving around and what's the intent. And so from lots of nights of listening carefully and a lot of note-taking, I'm hearing the vocals and Ivy's guitar basically get in the pocket. And the last mix of every song, it's right there. And I'm looking at her notes on the tape boxes, and it's her. She has very distinct writing. She writes like an engineer. You know, she ended up producing a lot of Cramps records, and it's like half a dB of hi-hat. I'm like, okay, this woman, she absolutely knows what she's after. And so with one exception, the keeper mixes were the last take, which makes sense. Anyway, I contact Ian Mackay, whose ears are much better than mine. And I said, you're going to be the other pair of ears on this. He's like, of course. So I said, I'm almost done. I'm going to send you all my notes, all the takes, and we're going to debate and discuss if you have any discrepancies with my selections. I sent everything to him. He listens as the sober judge he is. Anyway, I agree that the keeper mixes are kind of obvious, which I thought they were. Okay, he said, I'd like to do some EQ and level work on two of the tracks. And so he took them over to Inner Ear Studios at Don Zantara, where, you know, we made our first records. Yeah. They did their work. We sent everything over to Infrasonic in Memphis with the great Pete Lyman. And Pete and I, Ian and I, ping-ponged a set list, a running order back and forth. I came up with the body. He went, nah, ba-boom. And, of course, his idea was better. And so we went with my original, with Ian's, final. And it's the way to go, absolutely. And that's the running order of the record. We mastered, and to watch Pete work on this was an honor and a joy. He's so good. I'm never doing another project without him again. I mean, he's the best I've ever worked with. Anyway, we make the mastering. We send it to Larry and send it up to Ian, and everyone's happy. We have the cover photo. We find David Dodless, the great New York photographer, and get this great photo of the Cramps at CBGB's where Lux looks like a maniac. I write the liner notes and the press release. We give everything to Jonathan Kropp, John Kropp, the great layout guy. He lays the whole thing out. And I guess Revolver, who's doing the distribution on all this, they really wanted to move on this. And as you know, a record you put together in the spring doesn't come out in the summer. It comes out maybe spring of next year.
Right, yeah.
Or the autumn of that year. It's like it takes a while. But Revolver said, well, why wait? And like that schedule works for me. I want everything right now. And so Larry says, well, we need the liner notes now because I said, okay. And I just sat down and wrote them and turned them around and sent them. And, you know, I went through multiple drafts of that with Ian and Larry. And we came to that, wrote up the press release. And you are one of the first people we contacted. Joe Murray's on press. And I said, what about Chuck? And she went, oh, my God, he's great. And so we thought of you, and here we are. So we have this record that is a true find. I mean, I don't know if you know the legend of Tutankhamun. The reason no grave robbers got to Tutankhamun's grave and that beautiful sarcophagus is the grave robbers didn't know that under whatever king, he was literally buried under another one in the Valley of the Kings. And like these scoundrels just didn't know. If there was yet another tomb underneath Tutankhamun's, it's this. Like there's bootlegs online. And I think like one of these songs is on them. There's a different mix of one of the tracks. It's a CD extra on Songs the Lord Taught Us. But not this mix. Very different. And so how these songs kind of stayed out of the way of rabid Cramps fans, which I include myself as one of, is kind of astounding.
Yeah.
Because 1977 to now is a long time. It's almost 50 years, right? And so that's a whole lot of Cramps music, fully mixed, that just didn't leak out to the world. And maybe it's just because of like Lux, Ivy, and Alex are just, you know, they're not walking out and pressing the flesh every day. They're not running for Congress. And so it's a true find, you know, and these songs are broken out of this, you know, amber, defossilized and unleashed upon the world. And Vengeance Records is back. Like Look Mom, No Head, Fiends of Dope Island, Rockin' and Reelin' and Austin in Auckland, New Zealand, on and on and on, all coming back into print. New merch deal done, and everyone's going to get accounted for. And, you know, Ivy and Larry, that's their business, none of mine. And Ian and I just want people to know, Ian and I are working pretty hard on all this stuff, giving it the attention it is due. But we work for free. The Cramps were one of those bands that done brung us to the dance. And like, for instance, to get all the tapes, I flew myself out to L.A., rented the van, gathered the tapes with Larry, loaded them in the van, and drove them to my home. I paid for all of that. I'm not looking to get paid back. I just want to serve this history. And, you know, what's my thank you? What's my reward? Cramps fans being insanely happy.
That's right.
I mean, you are one of our few witnesses. You have heard this thing.
Yeah.
And at this point, you are rare. But soon, you'll be one of the legion. But you've heard the whole thing. And like, I think I've spoken to like two or three people who've heard the whole thing at this point. And so, question to you, what do you think?
Yeah, man. Well, first off, when you had kind of, you know, told me what was going on, I couldn't believe it. And then, yeah, when I read your press release about these reels and just how this all came to be, I mean, it was astonishing. Like you said, 50 years and nobody's heard some of these songs, most of these songs. Like, it's just, it's unheard of that could be a thing. And so I was already excited. And, when I got to listen to it and listen to it again, listen to it a few more times, they sound fully formed to me.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, you know, because this is 77
and they're not fully formed,
but yeah.
Nick is very new in the band, a very good, you know, very good drummer. And the band was getting, you know, their thing. And like the Cramps, you know, whatever that, however you describe, the Cramps had a thing that preceded them. And it's why we still talk about them now. You know, like Bowie had a thing. You're just like, what is it? I don't know, but I love it. And what astounds me about this collection, the band is great, but Lux Interior, I mean, he's not new to singing and he's not new to the studio, but he's pretty new to the studio. And there's no hesitation. There's no lack of confidence or whatever it is. Maybe it's just insane raw talent, because he is just fully occupying the space. And it's just a beautiful thing. And if you're a Cramps fan, in a tape trader, a fan of the bootlegs and all of that, you will be aware of Cramps at Max's Kansas City, Cramps at CBGB's, early Cramps, where they would cover Hungry by Paul Revere and the Raiders, Rocket in My Pocket, Problem Child, an early Sam Phillips song, which came and went through the set pretty quickly, as did Hungry by Paul Revere and the Raiders. The fact that they did studio versions of those is just a miraculous thing to me. That just blows my mind. And I remember hearing, you know, I was young and ignorant when I first heard the Cramps do Hungry on a live tape. You know, like, what is that? I didn't have the internet or anything. And so years later, I found out that that's Paul Revere and the Raiders, who I know, you know, very little about. And I'm not trying to show disrespect. I just don't know their music that well. And that's because Alex Chilton said, hey, you know, we're just going to put it all out there. And it turned into like this kind of marathon session. And it's such a smart idea. And I think Alex Chilton, he kind of operated a little bit with chaos, and that a band probably doesn't know all the time what they have to offer. And I think he worked with so much raw talent and he understood his own talent that he said, well, maybe the Cramps don't even see that this is the A side. And maybe they should be not thinking A side. They should just be thinking, play a song, play a song, play a song. like a gig, like band practice. And I think that's how you get the energy that comes off these tracks. I mean, it doesn't sound like a demo.
No, it's, not at all.
It really sounds like an album. And luckily, you know, the track listing works out. The songs have all, you know, like high and low, lots of vicissitudes. And what you should know, which I don't know if you know or not, Alex Chilton, the tape that he sent, it's got two versions of, I believe it's TV set, two different vocals, very different. And so I had to make a choice. Which vocal version are we using? And the vocal that you heard on Gravest Grady, it kind of is more in line with the rest of the record. It just kind of hits that groove.
Yeah.
The other take is really good. You might also remember the great, with Brian Gregory on guitar, version of Can't Find My Mind with the wonderful Echo and Lux, which is so cool. There's another version with less echo. It's also really good. I had to make a choice. And so I wrote Larry one night. I said, I'm going for Echo, right? And he wrote back. He said, hell yeah. So I wrote Ian. I go, Echo, right? He went, oh, yeah. And so the other one has to come out. And so we've already made a single, a 7-inch. I think it's being pressed right now. I own a lot of Cramps photos. So we used photos that I own for the cover. I wrote up all the back cover stuff. And so the A side is TV set, which is exactly their proposed A side. So we're kind of bringing that back around. And it's called More Gravy.
Awesome.
And that sucker is being pressed right now for, I get August, for August release. So hopefully, if all goes according to plan, fingers crossed, we'll have Gravest Gravy and More Gravy, the accompanying 7-inch, in multiple color variants.
That's it.
And it sounds so good. We mastered it. We fired up Pete, and we mastered that sucker. And it sounds really good. And the vocal on TV set is very different. It's really cool. It's just different. I think I made the right choice. The one for the A-side is way more A-side, where the other one is way more album. So I think we did the right thing.
That's cool. It's like it's... you know, you unearthed Gravest Gravy, and then there's still something underneath it, and you're giving the fans the 7-inch with these two other takes. And I love that, man.
Yeah. And to put some more chum in the water, there's another project that we just finished mastering. And then there's another project which we start work on in early June. So probably it's finished by the time people hear this. I don't know. That involves myself and someone named Ian Mackay. And that one is going to be a true barn burner. And so we, you know, we are working, you know, that's our job is to go through the vaults, the archive, and find source masters that are great and should come out. And then yesterday, I get an email from a guy, Dear Henry, read the press release. And if you and Ian are working on this, then I know it's legit, which is a nice thing to hear. He said, my uncle worked at a studio in Memphis called Ardent, and he left me some tapes, and I think you should have them. And there's more Cramps tapes. And so I'm hopefully going to be picking those up. What's on them? I have my theories. But we will find out, hopefully, soon as possible. So maybe this is supposed to be. And my dream is to have all these tapes under one roof in a climate-controlled environment, transferred and digitized for posterity. And if the material is up to snuff, we put it out for Cramps fans. And you know, think of this. I don't think anyone gives this enough thought. With bootlegs, no one, you know, the band doesn't get paid. But also, the Cramps did a lot of covers. And so there's other writers to be paid. And with bootlegs, those writers don't get paid their publishing. And now that we're doing everything legitimately, like Problem Child, the Sam Phillips estate gets paid. Rockin' in My Pocket, I don't know who wrote it exactly. It's in here somewhere. But finally, you know, there's live versions, but now justice will be done. And that's a large part of this, is like getting great material out for Cramps fans because they deserve nothing but the best. But righting wrongs, and like, you know, there's right and wrong. And wrong is it, you know, whatever the opposite of enjoyed is, you know, endured by many recording artists and photographers. Their photos get used on lunchboxes and skateboards and they get nothing. If Roberta Bailey had a dollar for every time her cover shot of the first Ramones album has been used for, you know, a golf bag or whatever, you know, she'd have the GDP of Spain in her back pocket. But, you know, and same with bootleggers. And I'm guilty as charged. I love music, so I buy bootlegs all the time. I have every Cramps bootleg I know of because I want to hear it. I'm a fan. And so, but I'm part of the problem. And so I don't blame a fan for getting a bootleg. I just wish the bootleggers would do right. Like, just send a check. But, you know, that's not the business they're in. So we are trying to mitigate that and neutralize that as well. And so basically Jimmy and Larry run the show. I'm audio guy and I do this with Ian. And I wouldn't do any of this without consulting Ian. You know, 50, or I think we're 52, 53 years into our best friendship, and his ears. I mean, I don't trust anyone's ears more than Ian. Like, his ears are like Abraham Lincoln, just calm, sober judge. He's like, no, too much hi-hat. Like, he's been around it. And so he operates in a hyperbole-free state where I'm all about the exclamation point. So he's the yin and the yang, and I'm the idiot talking loud over there. And so he and I are, you know, I'm gathering, and then I pitch it to Ian, who goes, well, you know, calm down, young man. Like, let's look at it this way. And so hopefully we will keep doing these things. Larry and Jimmy, you know, I like my job way better than their job. So we're having a lot of fun, and I really think we're doing a good thing. And as far as a band to do a good thing for,
it's the Cramps.
It really is. And it's so serendipitous for me to have seen this band and have them really kind of, you know, really change how I thought about music. Seeing the Clash and the Cramps within weeks of each other, to, you know, be in front of Joe Strummer and all of that, which really gets your mind right on, you know, like authority and right and wrong and all of that. And to see the Cramps and go, okay, well, wow. And I don't think I understood what rockabilly was. You know, I was really young and very thick-headed. And so what's that? And, you know, the singer in the Teen Idols, Ian's early band, Nathan Straitcheck, you know, he was really all over the shop when it comes to music. And he had that King Rockabilly, a King Federal Rockabilly compilation record. This is like five songs from each label or whatever. It was a $1.99 cutout. And he had it, and Nathan was cool, so I must have it. So for two-thirds of an hour of minimum wage work, I had it too. And between that record and the Cramps, I was introduced to this thing called rockabilly. And later on, I understood more about it. Robert Gordon, Tex Rabinowitz, all these people who I got into. And then as a more experienced person, I got to read Cramps interviews and got the ethos as to why they like this music. And I could not agree more. It's so much more punk rock than punk rock. I mean, those guys took way more drugs than punk rockers. They're just criminal maniacs. And you really understand the appeal that they had to Lux and Ivy. These are truly deviant people. You know, they make a lot of punk rockers look like, you know, Boy Scout types. The rockabilly people are just like really bad news. And the music is really good, super simple and really good. And so it's because of the Cramps I discovered this kind of true underbelly genre of music. Like these like moist, sticky people making music. And this love affair I have with all of that goes on to this day. And now we get to have it in the present tense by putting out, you know, this great music. And I think everyone's going to have a lot of fun. And I dare to say that Jimmy, Larry, myself and Ian and the other people we work with, I think we're the right people for this.
Yeah.
We're very careful. And I think the last time you were over at the house, I think I had all that music in the hard drive.
Oh,
and I'm like,
man.
And it's like eating a lit stick of dynamite going, you just can't say anything. And a couple of days ago, the press release came out, which is like, finally, we can exhale. And within an hour, you know, my laptop is vibrating on my desk because of all the incoming email. Like, what is this? And, you know, I have to explain. And it's very exciting. And the excitement that I'm getting from people. And luckily, the record is going to live up to the expectation.
Yeah.
By the time it comes out in August, people will be like, oh, I can't wait. Well, good. Like, be on pins and needles all the way until August. And it was Larry's idea, I believe, Larry and Joe, the press person, to make that video for TV Set,
which is
easy to find at this point. And you get to hear a track from the record, and the video is just completely bonkers. God, I think I've watched it at least like 7 or 8 times. It's so cool. And you get to hear a little bit about what we're talking about, and it's just going to knock listeners out. And so rarely, and I said to Larry last night, we're texting back and forth until like the early hours, covering bases and whatnot. I said, you better hold on to this memory because you and I are never going to have this much fun releasing a record ever again. Like, it's never going to be better than this. Because, you know, every other record, you know, has its problems, and it's never this unicorn-like.
That's right.
I mean,
yeah.
This is one of those impossible stories. And it doesn't get this, no way, ever again, I think. And I've been involved with a lot of records. I'm on them. I've produced them. I've compiled them, whatever. And for many years. And it's a bunch. And I don't think anything comes close to this one.
Henry, I love hearing that, man. And, you know, I can't even imagine what it was like hearing these songs for the first time, listening to the mixes, picking the mixes, talking to Ian about the mixes, and like kind of seeing this take shape. But you had mentioned too, you know, you kind of built the body of the track list, and then Ian said, let's move this here, let's move that. Was that weird? Because you didn't have, you know, you weren't sure what sort of the original idea was in 77, and then when they mixed them in 89. So you were doing your best not only to take care of the audio and the songs themselves, but also like present them in the way that you believe the Cramps would have wanted them presented.
We are in the position of being interpreters, translators, and transliterators. Like, you know, like, well, in Polish we have a song, we have a saying that, and they transliterate that into English as best they can. And that's what's known as transliteration. It's like, well, it's those are something a little bit like this. And so we don't have Alex or anybody around, and for this one, Ivy is sitting it out. And so we're left to do the best we can. And that's how I came up with my selections for the mix. Like, what's the intent? What is changing from mix to mix? Ah, there's more hi-hat. And I'm listening with my eyes closed, making notes. You know, like I'm coming to the end of the song, writing everything down, listening again. And I'm like, okay, I see what's happening here. They're riding Lux up mix to mix. Ivy's now panned more hard right. Okay, I see what's going on here. And this one person doing the mixing is probably Ivy because of the notes on the tape boxes. So I'm trying to imagine the room, you know, and it's North Hollywood. There's just a terrified engineer, you know, like with Lux and Ivy in his room, like probably trembling. Anyway, we have to do that. So when it came up to the order, I want to open with TV Set because Songs of the Lord Taught Us, I believe, opens with TV Set. And there's a familiarity where a listener's like, oh, yeah, that's how the dance starts. And welcome to the show. And so I had my order. And Ian goes, you know what? First off, these two songs, how about you've got like 15 minutes on one side and 18 minutes on the other, and not great for mastering. And that's where Ian, you know, I wouldn't have figured that out in 150,000 years. Ian immediately goes to mastering. So he goes, how about this? Let's move that one to here. And now you've got like 16 minutes on each side. Pete's going to like that in mastering. I'm like, wow. And that is the power of collaboration. And if you have no ego with this stuff, and like the best idea, that's the right idea. It doesn't have to come from me. I've got no dog in this fight. You know, it's all about the cramps and the listener. And so I went, thank you, Ian. And that's why you defer and you bring people in and you sit them around the table and everyone weighs in. It's a round table. And so we changed the running order, sent it to Larry. I said, I came up with this. Ian tweaked it to here. Give it a listen. He went, love it. And that's... So that's the position that we're in. And so while we don't take ourselves very seriously, thankfully, we take that kind of thing very seriously. And at some point, you just have to go, okay, well, I'm going to call this. And you just have to go like, okay, we're done. That's it. And you just have to trust your gut and your love of the thing. And that you're fighting out of the corner of goodness, that all your intent is good. And I believe Ian and I are doing that, Larry and Jimmy for sure. And so that's the interpretation, translations, transliteration aspect of this. We are speaking for the cramps. And you know, it would be great to have Lux around going, are you kidding? You wouldn't do that. Like, I'd love to get chewed out. That would be the best. But here we are, you know, yeah. And so we're doing the best, obviously we're doing the best we can. And there's more of that, that we've been put in the position of doing. And if you read my liner notes and the press release, you know, I'm being very careful to not assume and basically writing about only that which we can prove. And so I wasn't there at any of these mixes. I can't get into the mind of Alex Chilton. And, a lot of the people who are, you know, there for all of this are no longer with us. And so we are basically doing the best we can with what we've got, which is an overused phrase, but literally that really describes what we're working with here. And are we doing a good job? I would just say we are really trying. And I think we're doing the right thing in that, like, we love this band.
Yeah.
And we love Ivy. She's such a doll. Like, she's the best. And so, you know, as you know, Cramps fans, like, you know, from here to wherever there's electricity, there are Cramps fans. It's like the Ramones, like they're everywhere. And we are so happy that this record is going to go all over the world. And there's nothing in it for me, but we helped. We've got our fingers in the dough, and that's it.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's no monetary thing for me, which is fine. But it keeps it really on the just, you know, we love this band and we're, you know, we're just doing this thing because they brought us to the dance all those years ago. And we're so glad it's us. I would have paid to have been part of it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to get paid, but you would have paid to do this.
Oh, hell yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, from that show in DC in 79 to this point, it's amazing. And I love to... How this started with you just wanting to preserve Ivy's things. You just wanted to make sure they were taken care of. And yeah. Then that spawned into
I mean, this. You've been to my place. I do a lot of archival work for bands and artists. And some are still with us, some are not. And that is magnetic tape, clothing, set list, receipts, invoices, summons, whatever it is, fan mail, all kinds of things. Because in my opinion, I've anthropomorphized the past. It is elusive. It wants to get away. It is carbon-based. It wants to disintegrate. It wants to go, no! And it wants to dance into the ether and disappear. That's why a flyer will eventually turn to dust. you can slow that down, but it is eventual. And that's why there's acid-free environments. That's why there's HVAC systems and on and on. And I've invested mightily in all of that. I've preserved my own history, which is of very little interest to me, but it's the duty. Everyone else's history is far more interesting to me. And so that's what I've been doing since 1979, I believe. Ian MacKay and I were walking down M Street in Washington, D.C., taping up Teen Idols flyers on light poles with our parents' Scotch one-inch tape. You know, that's how pro we were. And we got to Key Bridge, and we're about to about face and walk back, and we see all the flyers crumbled up on the ground. Someone had been following us, ripping them off the light poles, and I think we put some of them back up again. But that really offended me. Like, oh, you're trying to say we're not here? Like, you're trying to erase us? It's probably just some guy who saw us and like went, ha ha. And I said, okay, then I'm just going to keep two of every flyer I can find. And that's why I have like two of every Teen Idols flyer. And then I figured out two tape decks, copy tapes. You know, Teen Idols band practice. Hey, we made a tape. Let me borrow that. And, you know, tape a copy. And Ian started doing the same thing because now you have like Bad Brains live tapes, Cramps. And then, hey, this guy in Maryland, he's got a tape. Let's borrow it. Like, let's start preserving history. Then I joined Black Flag. Where are all the flyers? Over there in the box. Like, hold on. You know, start organizing that. And then you hang out with Husker Du. Is that a flyer? Yeah. Can I have it? Be sure. You know, get the beer off it. And like and that turned into a thing. And that's, you know, Carter was president when I started doing this stuff. And Ian and I, we are these preservers of history. Ian is more on the DC area beat. I'm kind of, you know, the bands that I like. And that's kind of what I see my job as I round third and head for, I'm in the fourth quarter of my life. And so I want to have some fun. And this is all part of that. But this effort to preserve and protect this music that when it came out was reviled or made fun of by old rock critics. Many of them later had to suck up and go, okay, I was wrong about that and that and that. All right, Fugazi's a good band. Like, they all had to like go, like, okay, like these whippersnappers had some substance.
Yeah.
But at first, you want to read a bad review, like just read about the Cramps and the Bad Brains and the Stimulators and this one and that one. And these bands were just panned because no one could understand it. Like, read early reviews of the Cramps. These British, the New Yorkers got it, unsurprisingly, but the Brits were like, I don't know. Like, what's this guy doing? And then like a year later, like, oh my God, I love this band. Like, okay, good. you came around. But someone should be preserving this stuff and putting it out there so it can be heard and seen and enjoyed and loved and, you know, rigorously preserving it and maintaining it. And I can now speak from firsthand experience. It's a very expensive occupation. Like, all those plastic sheets you see, those are like $5-6 each. And you only need 200 or 300 of them to stabilize this project that just came in. And I don't have a grant, and I'm not, you know, making tons of dough. So it's like, hey, but it's the damn job, and it must be done. I've never felt more strongly about, like, I think this stuff is more important than my next meal. Like, we cannot drop this torch. The fire can't go out. The story must be told. The mission must be accomplished. And damn, is it fun.
Yeah.
And you get to tap into the amazing talent and raw rebellion of these people who thought differently. Like, yeah, and you see it in every continent. Every generation had these bands and all these artists, painters, dancers, musicians, whatever, just went, nah. You know, and they took it right in the teeth, you know, and then some of them became Basquiat, and, you know, some of them became Nick Cave or David Bowie, you know, like, wow. And there's just a lot of, you know, tears of all of this. And I think all of it should be preserved. in case anyone ever needs to, like, some, you know, buddy doing a term paper. What was that band? Why here? Funk. Here's a box of their stuff. And I just think that's a good job. And it's for someone to do. It is painstaking, slow. I've been flattening a poster because it came in very unruly. I'm in like day 7 of flattening this thing, and finally the paper is seeing it my way.
Yeah.
you have to get back at those fibers going, no. You used to be flat. Come back. And the paper says, no. And I go, oh, yes. And so it's underneath lots of weight plates seeing it my way.
That's it, man. That's it. You're in charge, man. Henry, thank you so much for hanging tonight. And, celebrating the cramps. I mean, that's what this is all about. And congrats on everything happening. You know, the launch of Cramps Inc., your involvement with this company, with Ian, and this release of Gravis Gravy. It is out on August 21st. Sounds like we might also get a 7-inch around that time, which I cannot wait.
Yeah, hopefully.
You can grab information. We've got it at loudwire.com, but you get everything you need. Pre-order the album. I've already done it at thecramps.com. And man, we're just getting started. This is fresh. And so hopefully we can do this again closer to the release of the album, get even deeper into it, man, and keep celebrating.
Yeah, well, I promise we will keep you in the loop. And there's more to come.
Yeah.
And we'll make sure you hear it. And maybe we can have a version of this conversation again. And it's going to be really fun. And so you know how to find me, man.
Yes.
And so I know how to find you. So we'll keep it going.
That wraps up this episode of Loudwire Nights on Demand. Stay caught up with everything happening in the world of rock and metal on the Loudwire app and at loudwire.com.